First, our next guest has called parenting an endless series of life hacks in order to stay one or two short steps ahead of your kids. He's talked about hiding vitamins in ketchup, making cough syrup ice pops, and developing his own tool belt of weird stain removal tactics. But as the father of two sons, he says the Me Too era is raising a lot of serious questions about how to raise boys to be good men. David McGlynn is a professor and chair in the English department at Lawrence University in Appleton. His latest book is called One Day You'll Thank Me, Lessons from an Unexpected Fatherhood. His piece in the New York Times is called In the Me Too Era, Raising Boys to Be Good Guys. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, obviously, writing this memoir, you've been thinking about parenting a lot and parenting your sons a lot. As the Me Too movement broke and all these stories about harassment and other sexual misbehavior came out, what was going through your head as a father of boys?
You know, that's a great question, because I was thinking about it from two different fronts. On one hand, you know, I was thinking, how do I, sort of teach my boys to respond to what is obviously a sort of grave series of injustices that are being committed? But also, how do I keep them out of trouble? It was obvious to me as I watched that movement unfold, and as I have watched it continue to unfold, that part of what's causing it are some of the assumptions and sort of kind of cultural attitudes about what it means to be male and masculine. And I wanted to help the boys sort of think about what things they might be able to do to, you know, both kind of foresee a better world and sort of work toward a better world, but also to avoid getting into trouble themselves.
Did you have the mental energy to do this? Because parenting, a lot of it is dealing with the day-to-day stuff, getting them to school, dealing with when they get sick, that sort of thing. Were you able to find time to navigate that big picture, am I raising good people concern?
Well, you know, I think that for most parents, right, we're always thinking about that in the backs of our minds, right? And you're right, right? Like, most of parenting is day-to-day. You know, we're sort of always having to respond to whatever target is coming after us, right? It's like we're sort of standing in front of an automated ball machine, like on a tennis court or something. You're just having to kind of hit back what comes at you. But nevertheless, I think probably every parent feels this way, that you're always trying to assess, am I doing the right thing? Am I helping these little people grow up to be good big people? And so in a way, whether or not I had the energy in the moment, I found myself thinking, I really need to pay attention to all this one way or another. And because I work in a college, I feel like I am in some ways sort of on the front lines of that conversation. My students, who are, you know, just coming out of their adolescence and into adulthood, are talking about it all the time. And so I couldn't not pay attention to it.
As you write in your New York Times piece, you looked around you for some expertise, both at Lawrence University and beyond. Who did you seek out to try to get some advice on raising boys to be good men?
Well, you know, that's actually a really great question. You know, the very first thing that I thought of as I sat down to sort of muse on that article was most of what I can accomplish is just, you know, I can accomplish everything I need to do just by talking seriously with my sons. And then I realized really quickly that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to just have a series of conversations, even though that's the main thing we need to do. I needed to think more pragmatically. And so the first person I talked to, ironically, is a colleague at Lawrence. His name is Peter Gleck. He's in the psychology department, and his research focuses on bias, specifically gender bias. And he helped point the way to both, you know, some research into some other people. And those other experts, one's a sociologist in Maine at Bates College, another woman is a psychologist at the University of Kentucky. They helped me to understand the ways that middle school and even elementary school kids are under a lot of pressure when it comes to the sort of cultural politics of sexuality. And that means that girls are often finding themselves sort of tacitly receiving sexual harassment even at a young age, and boys are often dispensing it. And it's not always a binary between boys and girls, but it's often that way. And a lot of that has to do with the pressures they feel not to be sexual, but rather to sort of fit into these attitudes and norms about what it means to be either a girl or a boy. And I found that, you know, really quite interesting. And one of the things that I didn't want to do was just list a bunch of things that boys shouldn't do. you know, things that they need to be punished for, because I felt like that's a probably surefire way to get boys to turn away, especially my sons, you know, who are sort of often kind of looking for ways to thwart me and, you know, upend my authority. That would be a surefire way for them to go in the opposite direction. And these people, these experts that I talked to, these psychologists and sociologists, said, no, you know, there's ways to think about it a lot more pragmatically, you know. And one suggested, for example, that, you know, if you watch a movie, get your kids to take note of how many men and women are in the movie, a very simple activity. And then to have a conversation over dinner about in what ways those men and women interact with each other and what roles they play in the movie. And that seems like an easy enough thing to do. Another woman, the sociologist in Maine, said, you know, one thing that could help would be to teach boys to maybe do a few jobs that are often reserved for girls, like doing the laundry and even mending clothes and that sort of thing. And she pointed out in a way that I thought was very interesting that, you know, girls are often taught that they can do anything a boy can do. But it's rare for a boy to be taught that they should also do the things that girls traditionally do, such as domestic household duties and being allowed to express themselves artistically or emotionally or what have you, you know. And by encouraging some of those perhaps non-traditionally masculine activities, boys can start to learn to be a bit more empathetic and considering of other points of view besides their own.
Talking to David McGlynn from Lawrence University in Appleton. His latest book is One Day You'll Thank Me, Lessons from an Unexpected Fatherhood. Talking about his piece in the New York Times called In the Me Too Era, Raising Boys to Be Good Guys. David, especially with middle school, I think there's almost this gender policing that boys do for each other. Maybe parents do it for them, where they're learning how to be boys, how to be men, and that role is really narrowed. When you talk to experts, when you thought about this, what are ways to help, I guess, prepare boys for that?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. In middle school, and especially because my older son is now coming to the end of middle school, is just a pressure cooker for these kinds of gender roles and gender expectations. I think in large part because, you know, you have this crash of biology, right? Their bodies are becoming so hormonal and they're going through puberty at such a rapid rate. And they're also, you know, because of puberty and because of their growth, getting large enough to do the things that they have for such a long period of time only been able to observe, right? So they're able to stay out for some period of time on their own, or they're able to go hunting with the parent or do other things with the parent. And that often, you know, those are all good things, but they can sometimes lead, you know, young men and young women to sort of slot themselves into these sort of narrow gender categories. And the experts I talked to said simply, you know, see if you can find ways to invert those things, you know. And so activities in which boys and girls can spend time together that are not competitive and are not sexualized, you know. And you know, I don't think that any parent would think that their junior high kids need to be doing sexualized activities. But you can nevertheless think about things other than just sort of parties and dances that might allow boys and girls to spend time together in ways that encourage them to think about each other as human beings, right? You know, and one example that was given to me and then we have since implemented is volunteering. And I thought that was a really nice thing. And my wife and my older son, who's now, you know, the sort of middle schooler, volunteer at the homeless shelter and the soup kitchen in Appleton. And simply by going once every couple weeks to feed people who are needy, my son has been able to observe the sort of needs of others. He also has observed both men and women in roles that are different from what he ordinarily sees. And I mean, you know, sort of being the chefs and the cooks and the servers. And they've been really positive role models for him.
One thing that people often teach as a positive for boys is the idea of chivalry and respect and protection of women. And at least one of the experts you talked to said, that's maybe not the right road. What was the case there?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. And I will confess that that was the one that took me the longest to get my head around, you know. And growing up, you know, my mother was always very firm with me that, you know, if I'm on a bus and a the seats are taken and a woman gets on, I should stand up and give my seat up, and I should hold open the door, and I should hold open the car door, and et cetera. But it was Peter Glick, my colleague at Lawrence, who kind of talked me through that. And it's not so much that respectability and courtesy are wrong. In fact, those things are very good, right? We ought to give up our seats for people. We ought to hold open the doors for people. It's when it gets translated into the idea that women are inherently weaker and are in need of the protection of men. And so a man, by being chivalrous, or a young man, by being chivalrous, is sort of coming to the aid of the damsel in distress, that you have what Peter calls benevolent sexism. And other researchers call this benevolent sexism, which is a way of demeaning women just by simply thinking that they are, you know, you are well-intentioned, but you're taking care of someone who is by nature weaker. And it turns out that that is correlated to hostile sexism, in which people will demean and harass and, you know, et cetera, people of you know, women, but also people who don't identify along the traditional sort of male-female binary. And that was a little hard for me to understand at first, but as he talked me through it and as I began to understand it, it began to make a lot more sense. And I think the way to think about it is, you know, we're trying to teach boys, I'm trying to teach my boys, to be empathetic towards every single human being that they meet ever. And that means if they are walking into a door and there are people coming in behind them, regardless of whether that person is a man or a woman or straight or LGBT, they ought to stop and hold the door open and let the other people go in first, simply because it's polite and one would want someone else to do that for them.
Briefly, David, just a few moments left. It's one thing to have this mental game plan. Is it easy to sit down with a couple teenage boys and have these conversations?
Well, you know, you try to have them one little bit at a time. You know, and the sociologist from Maine that I talked to said these kinds of conversations take place all the time. They take place on the way to swimming practice. They take place while you're doing the dishes. They take place while you're getting the lawnmower ready to cut the grass. They take place wherever and whenever you can. And the important thing is you just keep talking to each other and you keep trying to help your kids sort of confront the complexities of the world they live in and to become better people.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's David McGlynn, professor and chair in the English department at Lawrence University in Appleton. His latest book is One Day You'll Thank Me, Lessons from an Unexpected Fatherhood. Been talking about his piece in the New York Times, In the Me Too Era, Raising Boys to Be Good Guys.